Hello, and welcome to episode 5 of the Newism podcast, where we talk to social innovators and disruptors to discover how they would shape a new, more inclusive economic system fit for the modern world. Our guest this week is Faisal Rahman, the founder and managing director of Fair Finance. Fair Finance offers high quality, affordable, and accessible financial products and services designed to meet the needs of people who would normally be financially excluded. Since their launch in 2005, they have helped over 55,000 people with loans, advice and support, having a hugely positive effect on their lives.
I'm in London speaking with Faisal Rahman, who is the founder and chief executive of Fair Finance, which is a great organisation which is providing finance in a fair way to people who maybe find getting finance difficult in the current system. Maybe you could tell me just a little bit about your organization, you know, when it was started, why you started it, and what you do.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, it's great to be here with you, Mel. It's nice to have you down in our office here in London.
Yeah, nice to be here.
This is a new place, so just watch out for the snagging. There's occasional bits of masonry that falls down.
All right, I'll duck.
So the story of Fair Finance, I suppose, is very much, I suppose, my story, because it really comes from my own observation of how people were accessing finance. All the way through my life. So my parents arrived in the UK after the War of Independence in Bangladesh in 71, 72. And I think my dad told me that he didn't have a bank account until 1984.
Right.
So for most of his life, well, for a big chunk of his life in the UK, he just had cash and worked in cash. And so I saw the challenges that they often had around saving money, building credit histories, and eventually trying to buy homes or being evicted from homes because of financial crisis in times gone past. And I suppose I'd always been interested in this area. And I remember my, as you spend time as a kind of an activist when you're at university, my mum took me to see a lecturer talking about how to use economics for good.
Right.
Which I thought at the time was a bit of an oxymoron. I don't really know how that works. All I've ever seen it do is not be very good. And there was some guy who stood up and said that he was empowering women, challenging poverty, and making a difference in Bangladesh. And that turned out to be Muhammad Yunus, who's founded the Grameen Bank.
Yeah.
And as any kind of snotty 18-year-old gets up and asks a really awkward question, his very, very nice, polite response to me was to say, "Why don't you come out to Bangladesh and see how it works?" And so I went there. And to be honest, I went to Bangladesh to figure out why I was wrong and he was right, because he won a Nobel Prize. And actually what he was doing was pretty amazing.
Yeah.
But it really opened my eyes to not just thinking about money and economics as some kind of theoretical thing that people talk about, but actually a practical thing. Because what he'd really done was to basically say, you can tell us what it looks like in the textbooks, but the fact is there are people who need money and they are good risks. And just because you don't know that, doesn't mean they're a bad risk. Your job should be to figure that out. And he often used to say to me, it's very easy to lend money to somebody with money. The challenge is to lend money to someone without. And that kind of inspired me to start really rethinking much of my own childhood and what I could do back here in the UK. And so what you're looking at, Fair Finance, is my attempt to try and find a way to lend money to people who have no money, because I think they get a pretty raw deal. In the UK, we live in a society where around 4.5 million people borrow from a guy who comes to your house, charges 600 or 700% for a loan, and maybe a couple of million borrow from a payday lender, charging up to 1,500%. And that just feels wrong for people who aren't inherently risky, they're just poor.
Yeah, and so you've built a big organisation here now. I mean, how many people are working? How many offices do you have across?
It feels definitely big to me, but I keep looking at it and think of we're just scraping the side of something much, much bigger. So when I launched Fair Finance, I was told there was no such thing as financial exclusion in the UK, so nobody gave us any money. So I started with a credit card, a £20,000 credit card. To get this started, and it was me and just a couple of other people who thought this would be a good idea.
Yeah.
And that was 13 years ago. And we slowly built it, slowly over time, and we're now, I think in our first year, we might have seen like 45 people come through the branch, and we're now 50 staff with 5 branches in London, a national profile with an online offer, and we probably see around 25,000 to 30,000 people a year.
So that's excellent. That's me. It's like the story of an entrepreneur, a real social entrepreneur, started up in a tiny way, being inspired by another social entrepreneur.
Yeah,
and now here you are kind of growing. Now people will be inspired by you, I imagine.
Well, I mean, I hope there are people who see what we've done and see that it's not impossible. And that's kind of what you hope for. Like I said, I think we do a lot, but we're nowhere near the millions that we need to get to. And that's probably what challenges me much more about how do you not just make an idea that's good viable? How do you make it bigger? How do you make it potentially system changing? And how do you get it into a place where it's affecting the kind of numbers of people that really will make a difference?
So that's really where we are coming from here with this whole debate that we want to have about the newism, because basically our theory is that the current economic system is no longer sustainable, it doesn't work, and how do you create a new system? What are the elements in a new system? So we don't have the answer, but we're speaking to practitioners, people out there are doing it. So it's interesting what you say when you say, hey, well, we've taken it to this size, and that's really commendable, but there's so much more to do. Mm. Now, it seems to indicate, and other people say the same thing, that the whole system is actually just not working any longer. To have these numbers in what is one of the wealthiest countries in the world, unable to access basically small amounts of finance, means the system doesn't work.
I think that's right, but I also think that people think that this is what the system is. And I think that's the challenge. And I actually think that's probably the root of what, to me, is the problem. We almost feel like it's an acceptable problem because it's the price for whatever else that we have. And we're not really willing to admit what that price is. So many of us benefit from things like, you know, free banking and low-cost finance if you happen to look like someone who's, like the vast majority of people, you know, works full-time or something, right? Yeah. But the moment you don't look like that, you pay a cost for that, and the vast majority of people don't see that cost, so we kind of assume that it's either it's non-existent, like that person told me that financial exclusion doesn't exist in the UK, or it's just the way the system works, and I'm kind of okay because I don't have to pay that cost. And I think the problem for me there is that it doesn't really generate any different type of insight. If you keep telling someone that this is the way it works, they'll just believe that. When in reality, what I really wanted to get down to is, I guess what I saw here in the UK when I started lending to people was that it didn't really matter, and I never really thought it mattered whether you were rich or poor. I didn't really understand how that was a determinant of whether you would pay back a loan or not.
Yeah.
To me, it was much more than simply whether you had money or not. It was like something a bit deeper. And I think you kind of forget that. You forget a little bit about what pieces together our entire global financial system, from the smallest piece, is that interrelationship between two people. And I guess when I remember working in the villages in Bangladesh and just seeing how this interaction worked, and then came back to the UK and working on council estates and talking to people and realizing that every decision I was making was much, much more based around the person that I was speaking to. And you know, it's unsurprising that the word credit comes from the Latin credo. To trust.
Yeah.
And actually that's what was happening. Our entire financial system seemed to be built on trust. And yet at some point we've forgotten about that.
Yeah.
And actually if we want to change it, that's the bit that needs to be reintroduced. And when I think about what is it that's really different about what we're doing at Fair Finance, it's not that we're getting to people who are outside the market. It's not that we're lending to them at cheaper rates. It's not that we're educating them. It's not that we're helping to build businesses. Those are all great. What we're really doing is saying that the decision that we're making is much more fundamentally different than simply an algorithm or a spreadsheet or some financial metric that's driving it. It's really about re-establishing a relationship of trust. And it isn't me trusting you. It's kind of convincing you to trust me.
Yeah.
Recognizing that most people who've been treated badly by the mainstream system don't really trust what they're being offered. And if you want to change the model, if you want to change the paradigm of these people not paying, you've got to convince them that you're worth paying. And that's a different way of thinking about products, services, and relationships.
It becomes much more the other way around than currently. People begging, if you like, to get some finance at some exorbitant rate. It changes the dynamic in the relationship.
That's right. And I think this is what we've kind of forgotten about, the things that, you know, in the end, Fair Finance lends money and gives advice. The second and third oldest business in the world, right? Not very complicated stuff, but actually what makes a difference is that I'm convincing you that this is relevant. I'm not forcing you, I'm not telling you, I'm trying to convince you. Because I know that actually, from a business sense, there isn't really much I can do if you decide that you don't trust me. Like, I can't make your credit history any worse. Like, I can't chase you for the debt because you haven't got the money. I've got to find a way to build that trust with you. And I think that's what's often missing when we think about finance, and well, not just finance, but just products and services and goods in the market in general, is that we think it's about convincing you. Yeah. It's the other way around. It's convincing you about me.
Yeah, that word trust comes up a lot in the conversations we're having with people in different areas, not just in the world of finance. It's almost like it seems in this world, in this economic system, that we've got that trust seems to have evaporated between people. But where you can see it, so in Bangladesh, for example, and I've listened to Muhammad Yunus and read his books and so on, it's almost like the unwritten guarantor can be the family or the community, in a sense, so that if you're defaulting, you're letting other people down, so you're not really going to default. Mm-hmm. And there's another layer of trust built in there, which I find fascinating, because to me it's a kind of comment then on, right, everywhere else, because the trust is broken down, you actually get in a different transaction.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's really interesting. So I've had to evolve that model to be relevant in the UK, but you're right, in Bangladesh, you know, there are lots of advantages about lending in a village and a community. Mm-hmm. You know, it's quite expensive for people to leave that village, so yeah. You know they're going to be around. Their family's there, so that's an implicit guarantee. There's a community kinship network that makes it tough. People mm-hmm. are quite religious, actually. They're mm-hmm. quite morally mm-hmm. wanting to pay. There's a lot of, I guess you'd call it social capital yeah. about you doing this, over and above the financial transaction. The biggest challenge for me was to recreate that here. I mean, London is a big city with a very mobile population.
Yes, it's a very... years back when I was involved with the big issue in Scotland, we tried to set up a kind of similar model. It didn't work. But the conclusion that we had was it was a very complex urban setting.
Yeah.
So you couldn't pull a kind of rural Bangladesh village and apply it to that complex setting. It was that conclusion. With hindsight, we'd have made it work. But anyway, we didn't. We learned things all the time.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and you know, went on to do even other great things as well. It is about. I guess it is that it's trying to. And I guess this is for me was the learning around what how do you build, because. My first iteration of this work was to create peer groups, which I realized couldn't work. And then it was to try and figure out, if you know what's important, so not lending money or not, it's actually how do you build that social collateral. If that's what's important, then that's what you focus your business on.
Yeah.
Not how much money can I lend out as quickly as possible. Because if you can't get that bit right, it doesn't matter how much you lend. Yeah. And to me, that's the fundamental part that is quite hard to see. So the skin of Fair Finance looks like a company that lends money and gives advice. The heart of the business is something that tries to recreate relationships with every individual that comes by. And in a way, it's been an interesting experience learning how to scale that, because I don't necessarily need more money to lend or more funding to give advice. I actually need more people who can do that type of work, who can build those kind of relationships. And if that's your limiting factor in scale, it doesn't really matter how much money you can raise.
No,
you'd just be scaling the wrong thing.
Yeah. Right? So, so one of the critical things if you're creating a new economic system, which we're talking about, you've got to have values in the basis of it, okay? So one of these base values you'd be talking about is creating this trust through people, either in your side or other sides and outside, kind of rebuilding broken communities. Mm-hmm. And you know, one of the things we might say is, why can't we have a global financial system that's based on fair finance or based on yours? Why can't it be a global system? And the answer to that is, well, why not?
I mean, I don't know, honestly. Like, when you start thinking about the global network of these things, it's quite hard to get your eyes above the pieces, isn't it?
Well, I think that's what we're trying to do in this kind of dialogue, this discussion we're having. So it's how do we create a system change? Because what you've got around the world is brilliant people like yourself, leaders and entrepreneurs and innovators and disruptors, maybe people around them, great organizations, sustainable organizations, but in the scale of things, actually tiny. You know, what you have is kind of juggernauts of systems currently where financial system, I would say, if you've got money, and particularly over this past 4 or 5 years, you really don't have to do anything. You just invest it in the stock market and you'll get more money. Mm-hmm. So the money is going to the money, and then the gap between the people that have the money, have the wealth, and the people that don't is just growing. So the system doesn't work, but it's global, and it's operating on spinning off on its own, but it's not a fair system. So if it can be done with that, without a fair system, surely we can create a fair system.
Yeah, it's tough, isn't it? Because in a way, part of what makes things that consider the impact of what they do work is the fact that they want to take their time to do it. And to me, that doesn't seem to be a currency that people are happy to trade. Mm. So things are subtending to doing things quicker and quicker and quicker. And the faster you make a decision or a transaction or something work, the easier it is for you to ignore the impact of that activity because you moved on to the next one. And there is something here about, and if you want to take the analogy up, I mean, I think about, we make a loan to somebody who could get a loan in 5 minutes from Wonga, and yet we promise to slow the process down to give them a better product, a better service, a better relationship, more opportunity, and a cheaper product. And what I've realized is that not everyone's ready for that. And it makes me, that's what makes me think. I look at the global financial system, people are just much quicker to make a decision, much faster to make a decision about what they'll fund and what they'll back. The moment you become complicated is when it starts to slow it down. It was when people start to ignore it, because that's what slows it down. So there seems to me, there's got to be this way of introducing some kind of friction. Because I think deep down, most people want to do the right thing. They want to back the local business. They want to support the organization that they think is offering value. But today, those are nice to haves. They're not part of how we think about what makes that work, because you're trained in a system and process that structures your thinking to be, make it as quick as possible, make that transaction happen. And as long as you look like what they've got, you're very easy to make that decision on. And I think part of what we're really seeing in the way that the financial system is working is this kind of a subtent and standardization. Everything's standard, everything's the same. The more similar it is, the quicker we can make a decision, the faster you can get something, the cheaper it can be for everyone. And so I think if we're serious about breaking that up, we have to recognize that we're going to introduce a bit of thought.
Yeah, I would agree with you. Maybe I would probably add in that a component that we have to do is about communication. So sometimes I think in our sector, we do that, we slow down, and that's the right thing to do. And actually then we try to explain why we're doing that, and that's quite complicated. And maybe we don't have to explain the complicated bit of it, but we have to communicate actually that in a better way, in a simpler way for people to understand. Because people these days, there's so many messages coming at them, as you say, kind of immediately, not just from computers, but you walk down the road, there's messages coming off walls at you and buses and so on and so forth. So your brain challenged to take all these messages in. So if you get a complicated one, you're kind of going, don't tell me this, give me the three things that matter. And maybe we in the sector have to be better at that, at telling that story. I mean, Eunice with Grameen's been brilliant at it. He's a brilliant storyteller.
Yeah, but I think that's our responsibility, right? All of us are advocates and campaigners as much as we are entrepreneurs, if that's the right word. We are, you know, created Fair Finance because we saw not just a problem, but an issue, right? Something that you could get behind, something that was wrong and fundamentally wrong. And actually, the more people you engage with that, the more movement you get around understanding why that is. And so people do need to get better at communicating, right? That's for sure. But they also need to not forget what it is that they're doing. And I think this is the danger when people end up complicating their ask. We are, in the let's say the social sector, more worried about how we structure our thinking for grant making, governmental, public sector bodies than we are really about communicating the issue. Because the issue is a public discussion that actually underpins what we're saying, and that we don't really get time for that. We get more time for filling out a form, structuring our thinking, and responding to something. I often, you know, Fair Finance is one organization in a much bigger movement of organizations wanting to do something about this problem. And if you talk to anyone, they will tell you that there's differences in all of them. But if you got all of those organizations in a room, they would say the same thing.
Yeah.
And that's something we sometimes forget and miss. We miss the fact that there are lots of mission-aligned individuals who are all organizations who are all doing things for the same reason. They might want to do it differently in their own bit, but in a way, that's what works.
So that's I think that's one of the key things for me moving forward in a new economic system, is that we have to align the mission-driven organizations much better in terms of messaging, because I don't you know, you look at, I say something like fair trade, which is what I use as an example. A lot of people will criticize it, and maybe rightly, okay, because it's not perfect, but at least they're doing something, and people do it slightly differently.
Yeah.
And some are more sophisticated than others. But the fact that they're doing it and practically making a difference to people's lives, to my mind, is a good thing. But then you internally, amongst ourselves, we talk about the model and so on, but you talk about the values behind it and how it works and communicate together would seem to me to be the key.
Yeah. I mean, look, I used to have fair trade food when it was disgusting, okay? So
yeah,
it's quite nice to have tasty coffee and tasty chocolate and decent coffee, finally.
Yeah.
So yeah, no, and that's what's really happened. It's gone from being a niche to something. And that only really happens when you get more and more people. You know, there are two things that I think about quite a lot. One is, like, we live in an echo chamber where we're so, this is how we think, right? We make these choices. It's just hardwired in us for whatever reason, our upbringing, our life, our choices. We're just hardwired to think in a way where we're looking at the impact of our activities. We're making decisions about our spending. We're trying to live a more purposeful life without really consciously thinking about it. But we live in an echo chamber, right? That's not what the majority of people in the United Kingdom or let alone the world think about. They think about something else. And it's sometimes quite hard to accept that, you know, a step in the wrong direction for us is a step in the right direction for a lot of people.
Yeah.
And it's really hard to allow ourselves to be happy about those kind of things. But they're important because they begin to move the discussion because every step gets a little bit further. And I think the danger that we end up if we just focus on our discussion of how perfect can something like fair trade or
microfinance
can be is that we end up arguing about the wrong things. You know, the other day I met four high cost credit organizations, and we were talking about our work, and they all told me why they were doing it. They all told me the same reason why they were doing it. They all told me the same thinking about what they needed to make it work, but they all did it differently. And I suddenly realized that the private sector, the market, the mainstream market is like that. There are lots of companies that could be selling you clothes, and they're all selling you clothes in their own way. That is, if you get into the details, differently, but from above, they're pretty much doing the same thing.
Yeah.
And I think we kill ourselves by not allowing our individualism just to be part of what we are, and not accepting that we're all part of something together as well. So we're offsetting both against each other.
Yes. So that's what we'd be coming from here, is we need to create this kind of new economic model which we can all kind of buy into and kind of go, yep, we're up for that. We're in this new system. This is what this new system should look like. And then you hope governments and others come to the table and go, okay, this is a system that we'd like to buy into because it's got these values and there are people doing things and we all have to wear clothes, to use your example.
So I guess this is where the challenge comes. I'm not totally convinced that this is the space that I would see government really ever getting involved in any real meaningful long-term way. Because I think that's a bit of a challenge. So if we're serious about changing the economy, we're serious about changing the economy. And that means the economy at large, all of the rest of the money that's moving. Now the government can help shape it, but ultimately it's our job to figure out how we're going to change that structure.
Yeah.
And that's where some of this conversation often gets missed, is that we've got to be able to prove that what we do works on every metric better than the way that the current metrics are, except the ones that we've chosen, perhaps. Like, we can't be as fast as Wonga, but you know what? We can have a low default rate. Or, you know, we have to figure out what works for us that we're able to demonstrate that shows our business to be not the kind of the last choice, but the first choice of what people think about. And that standard is something that I think is really important.
Yeah, I agree with you. I meant simply in the bigger picture, when you're starting to change things, government will come in behind. Government, these days, it seems to me the role of government in a lot in the world isn't about leadership anymore. It's about kind of almost followership. And so if you create something that works, that people like, and it's popular, they'll suddenly be on your side. But the problem with lots of, I don't want to talk about the government, the politicians so much, because what the financial area is what I want to talk to you about. But really, they lack any moral fibre, it seems. So so you don't get proper leadership. So somebody needs to be, you know, in our space that we are shouting about it in government, but they won't ever do something, I don't believe.
Yeah, I think it's a lot easier to tell people what you want the world to look like when you start making it, right?
Yeah.
It's a lot easier to bring people along when you start to show it. And I think that's even my own learning with Fair Finance has been, the more control we've had over our destiny has been given to us by us being able to demonstrate how successful our model is. So
yeah,
we raise money and grow the business not because we are a non-profit doing something good. We do so because we've demonstrated that we have low defaults, higher retention, better impact for all of our customers. And that's actually quite a meaningful sell to people. Yeah. And that bit of turning the nice to have, which is the bit within everybody that wants to do something right, as actually this can help me tip the decision between whether I invest in that lender or this one, that's where we have the advantage. We've got to get it right.
We've got to get it right, and but I think you are doing, and I think other organizations like yours are getting it right. The challenge, as we talked about earlier, is how do you take it to scale, and indeed should we? So sometimes we have discussions about actually for an organization like yours, there is actually a finite position you get to, because an organization can be effective locally, and maybe it shouldn't be, we shouldn't be looking to scale this globally, because actually it'll take away from the very essence of what you're trying to do, that actually what you're talking about, slowing things down, creating community connections, is about one of the key things we should be doing is re-establishing communities, articulating what they are and what values they have, and then having financial systems that support those communities. So maybe we shouldn't be being global at all and taking things to scale. I mean, I don't know if you have a view about that.
I mean, I have to say, I think we do need to think globally all the time. But we also need to know what it is that we're scaling. And I think that's probably a more important question to be asking ourselves. Mm-hmm. And I don't think there's a finite space for purposeful businesses. I don't think there's a limitation of how big or what they could get to. I think the fact that we haven't managed to do it tells us that it's a nut that's yet to crack. And I think that problem is because people haven't figured out what they're going to scale. It's very easy to grow things in the way that everybody else would grow. So I can give you a very easy example with Fair Finance. If I listened to other people who've grown credit organizations or lending organizations, they'll tell you the best way to grow is to go online, automate your systems, and then suddenly you'll expand very quickly. And you probably would, right? But if I, you know, if my system was designed around building relationships, how does that build relationships if my system's designed? So what they're really saying is, if you change your business to something else that looks like everything else, it will scale really well. And I think the challenge on us, or people who are running purposeful businesses, is to say, actually, this is the bit that I want to scale, and we know it will take longer, but we've got to figure out a way to do that. And I guess my hesitation of saying, let's just be satisfied with the local impact, means that I think we kind of give up with that very tough question. Mm-hmm. It's very easy for me to grow a business in East London. I've lived it for 30 years. I know it like the back of my hand. I know every community, every group, every street. But I know that the same problem exists in Luton. I know the same problem exists in Birmingham or in other small towns. And I think if I don't energize myself to try and do that, then I'm kind of not really saying I care about this problem, actually.
Yeah, well, maybe you've been a bit hard on yourself, I would say. But I mean, maybe a way of doing this then isn't necessarily looking at the kind of the practicalities of opening offices or whatever, but it's about the values that you've got in the system, the bit you say that's the more difficult bit to articulate, if you like. So you're saying actually the financial system should, you know, have the following, and it's about the relationships, it's about trust, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And unless those values are built into the financial system, it isn't going to work. So that anything as part of this, and that's how you scale it globally. So you're kind of saying, so what's not to like about the word trust anywhere in the world?
Yeah. I mean, one of the things I do notice, I have, it's funny, I've ended up through the work of Fair Finance, ended up meeting and talking to a lot of people who work in finance internationally and investment banks and other places. And what's really struck me is, A, lots of them are really clever, very smart, and they look very carefully at the numbers and the transactions that they're doing. But amazingly, when I asked them why did they do a certain thing, it's because they trusted the person who brought them the deal. And actually, I think for me, I suddenly began to realize that we don't really talk about how important this thing already is.
Yeah.
It's actually there. And I guess that's why I think our job is about giving people another choice on the range of choices that they have available. And so I think it's there. I just don't think we admit to it a lot.
So that's really interesting. I remember years ago, I had a cup of coffee with a lead banker, actually. And he was talking about this very thing. He was talking to me about how poorer people wouldn't come into his bank, basically because they were terrified of it, because, you know, it was this grand thing with the counters and people, and as soon as they came in, they felt small, and these people were clever, and so that relationship wasn't going to work. And he was being very honest. He said, and indeed, it wouldn't. And then he went on to say, to your point, with the trust being already there, he said, so if we get a business plan from somebody, we'll look at the business plan, and let's be honest, we'll look at what school he went to as the first point. And it's not necessarily about there being posh schools or whatever necessarily, but that school gave you a trust point. So because you would know other people that went to that school, that that school was okay. So already by just doing that, regardless of what the numbers said, regardless what the plan said, you were kind of, if you were in the right school, you were in the, and that was what he was telling me about was exactly what you were talking about, is trust in the system. However they were doing it, in his case, he was talking about schools. It was really fascinating. He was being very honest about it.
I mean, I was interested by, there's somebody, we had some volunteers from a bank to come in and just work with us on some of our underwriting process. And they said to us, you put the same attention to an individual earning hardly anything that we put into a multinational company when we're assessing them.
Interesting.
And I said, you know what, that's actually, you're right. What we've tried to do is say, how do we get under the skin and understand, how do we get under the skin and really understand what's going on here? How do we do that? How do we do that beyond what just the numbers are telling us? Because the numbers are telling us not to do this. And that's just the easy answer. What we really want to find out is how to do this. And you only get that when you know, we probably have an equivalent of knowing what estate they're on, knowing whether they're telling us anything that's truthful and honest. I mean, we have our equivalent of trying to figure out if they're being truthful and trustworthy with us, and if we can trust what they're telling us. I mean, there's all of this is interplayed, and I was struck by how similar that conversation was with bankers who regularly assess FTSE companies.
Yeah. That is interesting.
And that's what gives me hope, right? So, you know, when I said to you just before we kicked off this, I think part of our job is about, it is about flexing the system a bit, because I think inside there is this slightly rebellious thing in everybody that wants to do the right thing. And it's become rebellious because it's a bit unusual and a bit different and quite hard. And there isn't one person that I have ever met that says that we're doing a bad job.
I can imagine. So I come across the same type of people as well in the work I do. So talk about, you know, I'll do talks and I'll say, anybody think homelessness is a good idea? So I've spoken to very rich audiences and very poor audiences and young people and old people, and no one's ever said it's a good idea.
Yeah.
So why do we have it then? I then ask, how we created a system that allows this to happen? And you'll find again that the people who run businesses, that own businesses are pretty well off, they actually genuinely care about it. There's few people I've come across who I've thought about, they're really horrible people who don't care. Actually, people do, and it seems to me that they kind of look to you, maybe, or me, or everyone kind of go, so what do we do now? You know, they don't actually have an answer.
Yeah.
But and somehow, subconsciously, or consciously, in your banker example, they actually know that what you're doing is right.
And they understand it better. And that's why I come back to the, I think, you know, I'm not sure I'm smart enough to figure out what big mega change is possible, but I am clear that when given a better choice, all other things being equal, people will make the better choice. And that's what our job is. Our job is to keep giving more and more parts of the financial system, whatever economic system we're part of, better choices, and demonstrating that it's better than what they have. And that's our challenge. And that's why, to your first question around, is what about this question of scale? That becomes part of it. It becomes part of demonstrating that this is more than just me in East London. It's something bigger. It's something that I can help you be part of, and you can be along the journey of fixing it. And that's That seems to be the important thing.
Yeah, I'd agree. I mean, I think that we're both part of the Ashoka network, and you've been in World Economic Forum, is that right, with the Young Global Leaders and so on. So there's attempts out there, I think, to kind of recognise the sector in a way and help promote it, but it's more around the individuals, and that's fine. It's about identifying the leaders. I think that's okay. But I think more maybe now it needs to be about actually the organisations and what these organisations stand for, and how can you put organisations together to promote what they're doing in a way that's coherent, that people will start to say, well, actually, this is the way you should get your finance, this is the way you should buy your goods, this is the way you should look after the environment, etc., etc. Maybe that's what's required now that's missing.
I mean, there's definitely a sense of one of the dangers. I mean, I think Ashoka does a fantastic job of helping individuals scale and think about an idea, but also connect them with people who can make that work as well on the World Economic Forum, of trying to bring some of that stuff together. But in the end, it's quite hard. I think all of us suffer from the, we know we're not there yet. And it is quite hard for people to say, here's the definitive model, right? So much of it, unfortunately, comes back to how have you made this work, not how can we make this work. And so there is a bit of this where part of our job is actually keeping the ladder down and guiding people on the process, making sure that what we're doing is not the most unique thing possible, but a normalised response. So your question, one of the questions we get asked a lot around is like, when are you going to be in Manchester, or when are you going to be in another country or another city or something?
Yeah.
And actually, what I'm really looking for is somebody who just says, I want to do that as well.
To kind of have a franchise with you or copy you.
And the more I think about it, the more that I just don't know why we don't do that. We associate the word franchise with McDonald's, when actually we can own that. It's about the same brand, the same message, the same system, the same collaboration. We work to different metrics, but there does seem to be something within our own movement that focuses on what am I going to do? What's mine? Not what are we going to do, and how are we going to change this together?
And that's surprising, isn't it? Because you'd actually think it wouldn't be the case. Actually, you'd think that would be more of a trait out of the more private sector or profit-driven sector. You'd have thought we'd be more collaborative than we perhaps
so,
are.
So I guess in a weird way, we are. Many people that I come across in the social sector are not competing for what you would traditionally compete for. We're not competing for customers at all. Never are. Either because we're too small or too far away from each other. We never compete for the thing that drives the profile of the business. That stuff is, there's plenty of it. What we do compete for is funding. And that's where I think, or the message, and that's where I think the competition starts to come out, which stops people from collaborating. It's ultimately massively short-sighted. I mean, my own experience in Bangladesh taught me that, you know, one of the quickest ways to grow the entire microfinance sector was to pool all of the funding together, so that people didn't have to fight against each other, and brought everybody into the mix. And coming back to this question of how do we get us to think beyond just our own organisation? Well, if I devoted less of my time to raising money and more of my time to running my business, my life would just, you know, A, we'd have more impact, B, we'd feel better about what we're doing, but C, it might open my opportunity to start working together more with people, because I know suddenly we don't have to fight for the money that will allow us to scale and grow our businesses. So there is a part of this which is, yeah, how are we going to resource this? And ultimately, that is where this comes to.
Yes, and so that's a question. What happened? Okay, if you have a blank bit of paper and we're going forward here, right? Ideally, how would we finance it? Because you would need, for your organisation to go to scale, it would need a considerable amount of investment. So where would that come from, and how would that work? Would it be a donation? Would it be investment? Would it be loan? How do we need to, in terms of scale, where do we get the sizable capital we need?
So my, I suppose the way I thought about fair finance and social businesses in general is that if we really believe what we do makes a difference and is viable, and it is better, then we should be able to prove it. Not just in terms of a metric of impact, but actually our business model works better. It allows us to be more viable, more sustainable. It gives us something. So When I think about Fair Finance, I don't say to people that we are a fast, high-growth company, but I can guarantee that we're more stable, we're more secure, we're safer because our customers are treated fairly, they're not taken advantage of, they're likely to stay with us, they don't default as much, and they listen to us when we give them advice. So they become and stay good customers, typically high-risk, become sustainable customers. So the reason to invest in Fair Finance is that you want something that makes an impact, but also financially is quite stable.
Yeah.
And it's considered risky because it's the only one. And it's not considered risky because of what it does. It's considered risky because it's the only one doing it. And that's quite an interesting way to think about it, right? Because what we're doing isn't risky. It's just that there's very few of us, so there's no one to compare us to. And that makes people worried. So when I think about how do we grow the business, I look at the rest of the market that's putting money into businesses, whether that's funding the stock exchange or, you know, other private sector businesses that are raising capital all the time. And I am convinced more and more that people are thinking more carefully about where they'd like their money to be. And they are not asking for, like, the vast majority of people in the world are not looking for triple digit returns or double digit returns on their finances. They're looking to know that the money they put out does something useful, helps them to get their retirement covered, their pension, or whatever investments they have covered, and that they don't lose something. And if that isn't what we're selling, I don't know what it is that we're offering. And in that market where people see that we are safe, secure, stable, and impactful, I think that's how we're going to raise more money.
And would that be, you know, a traditional investment model? So
yeah.
You'd ask individuals and groups of individuals to invest in you and they'd get a return.
So Fair Finance has no philanthropy, has no government money. It's been funded by that model itself. So we've been able to convince people that there is a viable model to fund that gives you your money back, where you get a meaningful return that's fair for both us as a business, the customers, and for you. So you get what you want, we get what you want, we get what we want, and our customers get a better product, and you get to be part of the journey of this organization growing. And I've been impressed by the increasing numbers of people who are saying that that's important to them. And I think that market's just bigger. Our challenge is there aren't very many people doing it.
Yeah, so it's how you grow your base, isn't it?
And that's why I really want more people to do it. Yeah.
Well, I mean, so then it becomes a simple model from what you're saying, because the more people that do it, then you can go to scale, isn't it? It's simply as simple as that. The more people that invest, the more clout you will have in UK.
The more people who invest, the more money we have available. Our challenge to growing is making sure that we figure out how to grow properly. That's our challenge. My limitation has never been the ability to raise money. My limitation has been the ability to find people.
To find people to partner you. So to use your Manchester example.
People who want to come and work here and deliver the work, or work like somebody who wants to franchise it. That's the challenge. And I think that's a deeper challenge. You know, that's another one of the kind of conformities that people go to school, go to university, get a job, and then they're structured, then they get a house, and then they retire. Actually, we're asking them to say, here's something quite radically different. You can be part of a mission. That's unusual.
I think I would agree with you. I particularly find with younger people I speak to that they're actually very interested in this space, actually.
Yeah.
I find generally. And more committed to it. So that it comes back to, again, in terms of the economy, what values. So people are starting to say, you know what, the system's not working. Some other system, I'm interested in it.
Yeah.
And I think you'll find that your kind of base will start to increase. More interested people interested in it in terms of maybe partnering with you.
So the challenge will be the KPI that I use, the key performance indicator I use, is when we can start to attract middle management. Right? We know that we've been successful.
Well, why do you have that as a KPI?
Because we have been always inundated with very passionate young people who want to do something and have made that decision. Or have shifted very quickly, so worked a couple of years in something and then made a decision that they want to do something purpose-driven. Or we attract people who've kind of had their life and now they're looking, they've had success and now they're looking for relevance in their life. And those two extremes are great, and that's how we built Fair Finance, and it's really powerful. But actually that isn't the majority of people. The majority of the people are the ones who are turning the wheels and making these businesses work and tick and making the industry grow. And actually, when you can start to attract people in the middle who are making much tougher decisions, actually, not at the beginning of their career or at the end of the career, but right in the middle of their career, that's when you know that you've started to make a really big difference, because people are thinking, oh, this is something that's actually quite powerful. This is something where I could have a career.
So
that's got to be something worth aiming for, right?
Absolutely. So, and your KPIs, how are they doing? How are you doing with your KPIs?
Well, the average age of Fair Finance is 28.
That's right.
We're upping it. Yeah. Although some of that might be driven by me. I think I'm the oldest person in the company. But, no, we've got, you know, I think actually one of the nice things in the business is we've got really young, dynamic, motivated staff, but we've also been attracting people who've worked 10 years and 15 years in the corporate sector. And that to me is a really key part of it, because that's the bit when people are making decisions about the next 20 years of their lives. And that must mean that they see something, and that's got to be.
No, I understand where you're coming from, and it's the most risk time, because of that middle management, that age will probably still have potentially a big mortgage, their kids are just growing up.
And that's on us, right, to figure out how to get right.
And so, you know, they don't want to be in risky jobs necessarily, because they're driven by other things, but possibly. But that's why we're talking about changing the system. So that's what's the matter with the system. What you're describing is that everyone's in that system, so they're stuck in that system because it's safe or materially safe. And this is the bit that we have to, the core of what we need to change, to actually say, no, to be safe, is a fair finance system like the one that you're talking about, when you're delivering. That's what we need to change.
That's right.
And all of us are trying to do that. Tell me a bit about, I'm interested in the discussion in the sector about impact investing and socials. I mean, what's your view about that? Because in one sense, I think that's an attempt by people to come up with a way of getting financing.
Yeah.
So that surely is a good thing. And on the other hand, to the critics, I kind of say, look, yeah, well, maybe it's not perfect, but it's an attempt at something. And through discussion, another iteration might emerge out of this that's better. What's your kind of take on that as an initiative?
So on the world of impact investing and social investing, and I guess this whole movement of trying to use capital for more good, I guess I would say I'm an advocate of the principle. I think it's I think it's the right idea. I think like with everything, I never really judge something by the idea, but by the execution. And I don't think the execution has happened in the way that I had envisaged. Now, I may have just envisaged something totally different, but my view has always been that when you start something new, you need to really go out there and be willing to do things in ways that haven't been done before. And my observation is that it feels like many things have been done in the way that they were done in a different sector, but just with slightly different numbers. And that feels a bit of a waste.
Yeah.
Feels like a wasted opportunity, because a lot of the social investment world has been set up with subsidy or an implicit belief that we just need to make this work. And so I think we missed a trick in saying, let's just have a go. Let's have a go, let's figure this out. We have the chance to make something new. But I would say that what that has done is it has built more momentum and more knowledge, and the people who've stuck to it have really begun to demonstrate that there are purposeful, impactful businesses. You know, before the whole movement began, people would point to things like Fair Trade or The Body Shop, and now they can point to hundreds of organisations, right? And
absolutely.
That's great.
Absolutely.
And that is great. And it's gone from being a few exemplars to being hundreds of exemplars.
Yep.
So
yep.
In that sense, I'm pleased with some of those outcomes. I'm not so happy with the execution. I think in the broader sense of this movement around impact investing, where people are talking about how do I make my pensions work a bit better, how do these funds that have been created deliver on things like sustainable development or long-term economic development in a country, I think the jury's still out. To me, these are much bigger questions of culture change. All of these paradigms of thinking of what do you use your money for are all about changing the culture of how we currently think about our money.
Yeah.
And like any, as you'll know, running an organization, any culture, it, you kind of have to feel it. It kind of hurts a little bit. It's a bit uncomfortable. And if you're not part of the culture, you kind of don't want to be there. And my worry is that we are not really accepting that culture change. We're just saying that we're changing the words. We're not changing the structure, the process, the way things are done. And I think that's the danger. And the long-term impact of something like that is that you end up with, you know, is this just impact wash or ESG wash? Yeah. So for the forward-thinking people around it, I think they're taking it seriously, and I don't think there's many of them. And they're really thinking deeply about how to make those changes. But I think the vast majority of people are thinking, well, this is just another way to raise more money.
Yeah. So I actually, I think that kind of accords with my thinking is actually some people have come and said attempt to do something differently. But in lots of instances, it's just mimicked the current financial system anyway. Yeah. Put different words on it, put different clothing on it, and therefore it's not kind of working through.
It's kind of like, you know, what is it that you're measuring, right? So people think, well, all I'm really doing is I'm charging a bit less. That isn't what you're doing. What you're trying to do is figure out a different way of delivering the service.
Yeah, but it was to your earlier point, really, about, okay, where do we get capital from? Yeah. So the sector generally is doesn't have enough capital. And maybe this was a way of doing it. And it still might, I don't think it's, my own personal view, it's not quite right. And it's also not got a good reputation either. But actually, if people keep talking about it, it might kind of change into something. And the notion that it has original ideas behind it might actually start to come much better in the future.
One of my abiding memories in Bangladesh, where we were talking about how to scale microfinance in the country, was how do we attract, it's like this same question, this is like 20 years ago, the same discussion, how do we attract people to put money into these rural financial cooperatives, as they were at the time, or financial organisations. And what was amazing was how quickly people coalesced around, if we can't talk to investors in their language, and if we can't demonstrate to them how similar we are, we'll never raise any money. And I think that's kind of where we are right now. There are a number of social businesses that need to start demonstrating that they have something that's worth investing in, and they know how to grow that. And it isn't simply just about plugging numbers in a spreadsheet. It's really about how do they make their theory of change actionable. And I'm not sure enough of that's happening.
Yeah, I think that's right. I mean, we, at Homeless for Cup, as an example, the way our model is that we, and it's sports, but you know, we are like an international sports federation, if you like, and then we have one partner per country, and that partner works on the ground with the homeless guys, okay, and the franchise is it's not a franchise, it's kind of a relationship, if you like, in terms of the federation has grown massively, which is really based on trust, to come back to that word again, between the individuals in the countries to go and do ABC, which is really simple, just go and do it. And that's how we've managed to get it to a scale very, very quickly. Mm-hmm. So it's again, to the point you were making earlier, it's not that we own it or control it. We are basically the guardians of the brand, if you like, or the central core values or the philosophy of it. But actually, it's a movement, and we've got to know each other very well. And and as a result of that, we can be collectively very impactful.
And I guess that's how I think about running a really good business, right? It's like it's being part of a movement, and the entrepreneur is the activist, and it isn't simply just about how good your management skills are. It's about how good they are, plus how can you advocate for the problem that you're trying to solve? Because otherwise, you aren't changing anything.
Yeah, exactly. So we're all about measuring impact, which for our case in impact is getting homeless people not to be homeless anymore. It's quite simple. And I think that one of the differences between us, if you like, is that because we're using football, and it's quite a simple story, it's quite complex actually at the back end in terms of somebody who's got a lot of problems, maybe working with them to get them not to be homeless, but actually the story we're telling is pretty simple. Whereas I think if you were to apply it to finance, it's more complicated actually than that, you know, just simply because of the transactions that you're doing. Whereas we can be saying, right, we're taking a ball out into the street and we're going to play football with some guys and we're going to introduce some pathways out of the street. It's a bit more difficult.
I should introduce you to our compliance manager and our risk officer. You can
I'd love to
you
meet
can
them.
Begin to you can begin to realize how challenging it is. But I guess one of the things that I really wanted to do was to be able to demonstrate that we can go toe-to-toe with the private sector. And it wasn't whether your business was for-profit or not-for-profit that made a difference about how well it was run or how it treated its customers. It was about how you chose to do it. And I guess an inspiring thing for me is not simply people saying, hey, let me franchise Fair Finance. It's actually whether someone else running their business purely for profit realizes that doing it the way that we do actually has really good returns. And that's definitely what I'm trying to get to.
Brilliant. And other people will be inspired by you, I have no doubt, listening to what you're saying and, you know, connect with you. Or it's funny, sometimes you hear people do talks, people never connect back with you, but they go away and do things and you don't even know they're doing it. So they might never know. Because lots of people are coming from the place where they know that the system's flawed, so that they instinctively know that and they're going off and just doing things.
Yeah, and, you know, it's... I think for many people who started these things, you know, look, I built Fair Finance with nothing and I've lost all my hair and I've aged well early.
If somebody doesn't
have to pay those costs, I'm sure it'd be a lot easier for them to make some change.
Well, I mean, all of us as kind of social entrepreneurs, we all decided to climb the steepest part of the mountain, for sure. So the most difficult routes we're all on. That's why we can laugh about it with each other. We know what we're talking about.
Yeah.
It's sometimes very difficult. Listen, it's been fabulous speaking to you. We probably have to say, I just kind of want a final question for you. So are you optimistic about the future of the world? Are you an optimist or are the dark, too many dark clouds around and we're going to get crunched by them?
There are days when I crush a little bit under the weight of what needs to be done, for sure. And there are days when I look around and think, God, how hard have I had to run to move just an inch? But then there are other days when I look at the dodgy loan sharks we've put into jail, the businesses we've backed, the people who've moved off council estates and bought their own properties, the people who are now shopping we're at Sainsbury's as opposed to going to food banks, and I kind of think, you know what, we're making a difference. And I look around, especially in the high cost credit market, and have seen so many businesses being shut down because they just can't get it right. And here we are, still up there competing toe to toe with them and making a difference. And I think, yeah.
Good. Well, that's ending on a really optimistic note, I think. And you know, it's really fantastic what you're doing. Keep up this great work, and I'm sure lots of people want to talk to you more about how we scale this and how we create this new economy, which everybody can be included in. That's what we're aiming to do. So, thank you very much for your time.
Thanks, Mel.
We hope you enjoyed Faisal and Mel's conversation. We certainly left the Fair Finance offices with a lot to think about. We'd love to hear your thoughts on Twitter. Find us at Newism Talks. Next week, we'll be talking to Pamela Gillies, the Principal and Vice-Chancellor of Glasgow Caledonian University, which is committed to its social mission of promoting the common good. We hope to see you there.